From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. There have been many sweeping changes in the first month of the Trump administration. It can be hard to keep track. And as part of their plan to rapidly slash government spending, the president and so-called DOGE department head Elon Musk are going after USAID, which provides humanitarian assistance around the world. Here they are speaking last week in the Oval Office.
We are moving fast, so we will make mistakes, but we'll also fix the mistakes very quickly.
So, do you see it as a worthy cause, USAID?
I think that there are some worthy things, but overall, if you say what is the bang for the buck, I would say it was not very good.
But we're looking at just, when you look at USAID, that's one. We're going to look at the military. We're going to look at education. They're much bigger areas. But the USAID is really corrupt. I'll tell you, it's corrupt.
USAID provides assistance for things like polio vaccinations and food programs for people who are starving in famine-stricken regions. The majority of those employed by USAID work overseas, but Trump's efforts to close down the agency are affecting organizations here in Illinois as well. The Heartland Alliance in Chicago helps provide assistance to victims of armed conflict in South America. University of Chicago economists help to improve the effectiveness of USAID programs. In downstate, researchers at the University of Illinois' Soybean Innovation Lab conduct global disease research on crops with the help of USAID funding. Now all these programs are in limbo. We're joined now by Peter Goldsmith, director of the Soybean Innovation Lab. He announced last week that the lab had laid off 30 employees and expects to shut down. Peter, welcome to the 21st Show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Also joining us is Cleo O'Brien Udry, who is assistant professor of political science at the University of Illinois. She researches the domestic political consequences of foreign aid. Cleo, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks so much for having me.
And listeners, you can join our conversation on the show today. What questions do you have about how a shrinking USAID could affect us here in Illinois? Maybe you or someone you know has been employed by a USAID grant. Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. I should say we did ask our texting group. We'll share some of those responses through the show. We got mixed responses. John in Harvard said, "Farmers voted for this. They're just getting what they voted for. They can't act surprised. The Trump administration is doing exactly what they said they were going to do. They even wrote a 900-page book called Project 2025, so there's no excuse for any damage coming as a surprise." We also heard from Sarah in Rockford, who said, "I think we have a lobbying issue. Too many earmarked projects that are bridges to nowhere or don't have American interests at heart. I'm all for cutting the budget. I am for a smaller federal government." All right, Cleo, I'm going to start with you. Talk about when USAID began. Just give us sort of a thumbnail sketch. Why is the government investing in it for all these decades?
So USAID actually was founded in 1961 during the John F. Kennedy administration. It has taken on different forms over the years. In 1998, it was established as an independent agency. So it is governed by Congress through legislation. And over the last 60 years, one of the key features of USAID has been to support international development widely and to improve U.S. relationships across the world. So this not only means economic relationships, so USAID has a huge budget for exporting farming exports in developing countries, so food aid, which Peter, I'm sure, will talk more specifically about, but it also means developing markets abroad for U.S. Producers to sell their goods. So USAID is actually one of the, if we use the phrasing of Trump and Musk, one of the most efficient bang for your buck institutions in terms of U.S. presence abroad.
It's also about soft power, right? And maybe we can talk about that as we go on. But it's a way of sort of, how would you say it, like projecting America's power around the world without, you know, doing it through military spending, as often is the case?
Absolutely. We have an alarming amount of research that tells us that USAID is one of the most efficient ways of improving opinion about the U.S. abroad. And this means people abroad are much less likely to engage in activities that might be perceived as anti-U.S. I actually was a Peace Corps volunteer in my youth, and we worked closely with USAID in the Balkans to improve post-conflict relationships between different ethnic groups. And if the US doesn't want to be involved in military conflicts worldwide and still wants to live in a world that's full of peace and harmony, USAID is one of the most efficient ways to do that.
Peter Goldsmith, tell me about the Soybean Innovation Lab. What is it?
Yeah, the Soybean Innovation Lab was established in 2013, and the mission of the lab was and is to establish the foundation for soybean markets in Africa. We were renewed in 2018 and then renewed again in 2022. And our implementation, our kind of role is to develop the soybean market in sub-Saharan Africa, which serves two dual purposes. Certainly, as Cleo mentioned, the market development for U.S. industry, in this case, U.S. farmers and U.S. agribusinesses, is very clear. As soybean, you couldn't even have called it a minor crop when we started in Africa, and it is now growing over that market, and demand is growing at over 10% a year. But also, in terms of the soft power and the reduction in poverty and malnutrition globally, soybean has shown and is proving as well in sub-Saharan Africa to be a very efficient, effective engine for growth. So it's building strong economies and strong trading partners in sub-Saharan Africa. So that's what we do.
What was going through your mind when you first, I guess the first days of the administration, USAID was one of the very first agencies where Elon Musk and his crew sort of went in and started dismantling things, literally in some cases, right? Taking the sign off a building in D.C.
Correct. Yeah. USAID is a $40 billion operation, does a lot of things. The innovation labs, there are 19 of us in 17 states, and we're about $60 million. So when things started to unwind, it was unclear whether the research for development, the innovation lab enterprise, was part of the concern that the Trump administration had. And so as things unfolded, a large net was cast, of course, and the innovation labs, we were caught up in it. And that's unfortunate. I'm not sure that the Trump administration really had time or understood the real value of the innovation lab system and its land grant base and the impact that it was having. But so it was a good fish caught in a very large net.
I mean, no one asked you to submit a briefing paper on justifying the Soybean Innovation Lab or anything like that, I take it?
No, I just received, I actually run two activities, received two executive orders on the 27th of January telling me that I needed to essentially stand down the lab and pause in place while it was being reviewed. Not just my lab, but programs were being reviewed.
So how does that lead you, talk about making the decision to let go of the 30 employees that you mentioned?
Yeah, so it was a two-part situation. When I received the executive order, it wasn't, it's essentially one sentence, but it was clear enough that said no external activities, minimize costs, it said. And so we were idling in place, and that was, as I mentioned, on the 27th. However, over time, the next 4 or 5 days to a week, the university was unable to access our accounts in Washington. And so that proved to be extremely troubling because we're well funded. We manage our budgets well. We have the funds. Have a contract with the U.S. government to do our research, and those funds were no longer accessible. At that point, then you can't pay anyone. You can't do anything. And that's when we had to figure out, well, how long discussions with the university, how to treat employees well. And that was the university's primary focus, to as caring a way as possible, and that care would last until April 15. So that's how that date was chosen.
And just to be clear, like, I mean, our home station, Illinois Public Media, I'm a University of Illinois employee. These are U of I employees, just like the rest of us on this panel today, frankly?
Yeah. So our lab of 30, we have key partners who are subcontractors. I let them go, had to leave them go immediately because the executive order was pretty clear about contracts and contractors. The middle third are hourly employees, which I'm sure you have those in your office and so forth. And the university felt that it really has no contractual obligation to them. But as I mentioned, the University of Illinois has a history and practice of being very kind and caring, is carrying them until March 15. And then the final third are salaried employees like you and me, and our end date is April 15.
So where are these employees based? Are they mostly in Champaign-Urbana? Are they spread around the world?
About half are here. Half to two-thirds are here in Champaign-Urbana, but they are spread around the world, yes.
Cleo O'Brien-Udry, can you talk about what you've just heard and how this story may or may not be playing out in, you know, I don't know how many other dozens, scores, hundreds of other similar enterprises, both in Illinois, around the U.S., and around the world?
The sudden stoppage of funding for USAID projects is going to reverberate not just domestically, not just in Illinois, but across the country and across the world. So a lot of my research focuses on the effects of aid withdrawal in recipient states. So in countries that are receiving aid, the sudden stoppage of aid, and remember, these were signed contracts. This was aid that organizations were legally obliged to get. And the sudden stoppage of this means that they have no ability to quickly switch and find additional funding. You're seeing babies across Africa dying of HIV or being born HIV positive when just a couple of weeks ago, the hospitals would have had access to antiretroviral medications that would prevent the transmission of HIV from HIV positive mothers to babies. In the US, we actually have an enormous number of private organizations, in addition to public organizations, that are funded in part by USAID. So in Illinois alone, the amount of food aid that is driven by US, that is allocated to USAID amounts to something like, I have the exact numbers here, actually. Last year, food aid in Illinois had a huge, over $1 billion of food aid came from Illinois. In the last several years.
So these are products that Illinois farmers are growing that are being purchased. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
absolutely. So this is products that Illinois farmers are growing. There are dairy products. So Prairie Farms Dairy, which is located in, its headquarters are in Edwardsville, but it has locations across the Midwest, including in Urbana, received over $6 million in 2024 for dairy exports. But it's not just farmers. You also have manufacturing industries that are producing things like medical technology. So latex gloves, sterile needles for vaccines. Those manufacturers based in the United States that USAID specifically contracts with in the United States to provide American jobs, those manufacturers no longer have these contracts. So the Midwest is focusing primarily on the agricultural effects of this, but this is going to reverberate beyond the agricultural sector across the United States. And the impacts of this on recipient countries, are really dramatically bad. And it's going to be very hard for the US to reform those relationships because of the sudden withdrawal of aid. So a lot of these NGOs that are working with civil society to, you know, prevent dictatorships from taking over are no longer going to have that steady funding from the US. And because those partnerships are being fractured, they might disappear or they might turn to work with other funders such as Europe, but especially China. And what the withdrawal of USAID brings in, opens up a huge opportunity for China to fill some of those contracts that the US has broken.
Yeah, and I want to let's come back to that. We need to take a break on the program. I do want to dive into that aspect of the vacuum that America's withdrawal from the world may be leaving, especially for China, also other world powers to potentially fill. We are talking about some of the actions of the Trump administration and Elon Musk in particular. We're beginning the program today with the dismantling of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, USAID. We're a little later in the hour. We'll be talking about funding cuts at the National Institutes of Health. This is the 21st show. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the effects that the ending of federal funding through USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, is having here in Illinois. My guests for this part of the program are Cleo O'Brien Udry, who's an assistant professor of political science at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Peter Goldsmith, who's director and principal investigator of the Soybean Innovation Lab, a USAID-funded organization that's also based at the University of Illinois. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. Peter Goldsmith, tell me, why should, I mean, so we heard that USAID helps create create markets for American products, Illinois farmer products. Why, though, should the average Illinoisan care about, you know, whether African farmers are doing well growing soybeans?
Yeah, so a couple of reasons. One, Cleo was, inferring that strong economy, strong countries make strong and good trade partners. And since Illinois is an exporting state, that makes a lot of sense. More directly to the soybean industry and the agribusinesses in that kind of the soybean ecosystem, Africa currently, or when SIL started back in 2013, soybean was a very, very minor crop. That meant that the fastest growing, largest region in the world did not know soy, did not demand soy, had not committed industrial capacity to soy, were not buyers of US soy, Illinoisan soybean, and that's a market loss. And so the Soybean Innovation Lab's mission, which I stated earlier, is about developing the soybean market in Africa. So yes, we're not gonna affect the price of soybean today, but absolutely we're affecting the price of soybean in 2035. We are creating new markets and we see it. And we have good data that show the switch over from soy replacing palm oil as the base industrial oil in the market. And we see the crop market, the demand for soy increasing at over 10% a year. It's growing very fast through the work of the Soybean Innovation Lab and its partners.
And are there sort of, you know, one of the things people talk about is public health and human health, obviously, is very important to people. you know, it's like what it was, what is it called? Red rust or the red spots on the leaves of soy, you know, things like that. I know there's been some research done into that. Is there like an early warning component of that that could conceivably benefit American farmers?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the disease, we do it with rust, soybean rust, but the one you're referring to is red leaf blotch. This is a remarkable effort. We have very good infrastructure in Africa, working with colleagues in Nairobi, Kenya, and then partners all in Africa to study this disease, which currently is not in the U.S., is very detrimental to soybean. So if it were to come, it's a regulated listed disease at Fort Detrick, Maryland, as something that is a critical concern by the USDA. So they're very concerned about it. And what we do is we partner with USDA in Africa, get the work done there, and that prepares the U.S. industry should red leaf blotch land in the U.S. And we had a dry run of this. Many of the farmers and industry folks will remember back in the early 2000s when soybean rust was not present. And then it came up and made its presence known in the U.S. for the first time. But USDA was prepared because of collaborations with land grants like the University of Illinois. So we've done this before. We do it well, and it really protects U.S. farmer interests.
Cleo, let me ask you a couple of questions we got from listeners. Ann in Urbana sent a text message asking, what percentage of the U.S. budget goes to foreign aid?
This is actually a really fun question, because when people are asked when the public is asked what percent they think goes to aid, they think it's something like 40% of the U.S. budget. When they're asked, what percentage do you think should go to USAID, they think maybe 1% of the U.S. GDP. Actually, the amount of the percentage of U.S. budget that goes to aid is 0.24%. This is lower than our actual international targets of developed countries, rich countries spending 0.7% of their budgets on aid. So even though we have this giant economy, we're really spending minuscule amounts on foreign aid.
Another question we got from Karen in Champaign, and this alludes to something you were talking about before I had to rudely interrupt you to go to break. But Karen wants to know, what does this mean for countries such as China? And I guess that's the question. Are you seeing them going to be stepping in where the U.S. is stepping back?
That's exactly what we're already seeing. So China is already doing a public opinion blitz, both in China and in developing countries, to show that the U.S. is not a reliable partner, and that countries in Africa, Latin America, Central Asia should focus on China as a more reliable partner in the future. And we know that China and the U.S. directly compete when they're allocating aid projects. So if you have a U.S. aid project, that means that people who are receiving aid around that project actually are more supportive of the U.S. way of life, of the U.S. Democracy and economic systems. That also means that when you get an USAID project, those folks are less likely to say that China can or should be influential in their countries. So this is really a great power competition happening in the realm of aid. And by ceding all of this power, all of this space by withdrawing aid, China is directly stepping in.
Yeah. Whose flag do you want to see on the bag of rice that people are consuming, I guess, is one sort of simple, blunt, maybe, way of looking at that. Cleo, I also want to ask, in the short time we have remaining, you study climate finance and international development. The German government had a report this week calling climate change the greatest security threat of our day and age. What are some of the climate projects USAID has invested in the past, and you know, potential consequences if they lose funding?
So USAID has been on the forefront of funding climate projects over the last couple of years. They've been working on energy efficiency, so retrofitting buildings in developing countries to make sure that they're more efficient. I'm sure Peter is familiar with some of the crop adaptation efforts to ensure that agricultural production in foreign countries is able to continue due to a change in climate, and a lot of research is going into that. There's been efforts to develop renewable industries abroad, and also to tie those industries to the Inflation Reduction Act in the US to ensure that the US is also benefiting from those renewable partnerships. And especially disaster aid has been a huge boon to individuals that are facing flooding, increased hurricanes, increased risk of fires, which we're seeing in the US, but especially abroad. So the lack of climate financing, both in aid and honestly the deletion of climate from the public policy in the US government, is going to have huge effects on global security.
Peter, I want to conclude by asking you, so a judge has issued an order blocking some of what Trump has tried to do with USAID. I wonder if there's been any reprieve, and just more broadly speaking, what's next for the soybean land?
Yeah, so I was able to write last week when that restraining order was issued and correspond with someone at USAID who I've worked with in the past. And he said they were reviewing the restraining order and would get back to me. As of now, I haven't seen or heard anything in the impact, positive effects of that restraining order, nobody on campus. And then as well, among the 18 other labs, we haven't heard anything. So, it's pretty straightforward. We'll shut on the 15th of April.
Peter Goldsmith is director and principal investigator at the Soybean Innovation Lab. Cleo O'Brien Udry is assistant professor of political science at the University of Illinois. Thank you both for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.